Hello and welcome to this week's edition of The Edge, the official podcast of Bass Edge Television. Bass Edge Television is on Wild TV and Canadian for all you Canucks, and we're back on the Versus Network all the way through June of 2008. This is Outdoors Dan, and I've got my good friend, the host of Bass Edge TV, Aaron Martin, right alongside. Aaron, Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you, Dan.
Yeah, and I'm excited about this week. You're joining a real heavy in the fishing world, Pete Pons.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Pete is such a great guy and such a great fisherman, and we're going to head south down to Texas on the Mexican border there to fish Lake Amstead.
All right, well, I'm geared up, and I tell you what, let's just get going. And folks, that means one thing. It's all right here on The Edge.
You're listening to The Edge, the official audio program of Bass Edge. Brought to you in part by Ditch Witches Zahn. Experience the revolution.
Uh-oh, look here, I got one. Look here.
I mean, he whacked that football jig. The blades will dictate a lot of times the speed of the retrieve or the depth of that bait.
Oh, good fish. Good fish. Did you see him come off that log?
Woo, look at that sucker gun, man. That's awesome.
You know, you've got to just stay active. Fishing is not easy.
Oh, man, that's a toad.
This is unbelievable.
Well, Aaron, I got to tell you, it's a brand new year, and it's a brand new season of Bass Edge.
It is, and, you know, it's exciting. I mean, we've got a lot of great things going on, a lot of great location, a lot of great anglers that we're going to be fishing with. And, you know, we kicked off really this is the first podcast with the new format. So a lot of great stuff to talk about.
Yeah. You know, and I'm still waiting to hear when you guys are going to send me a camera guy. You know, I'm going to start ice fishing next week, and nobody calls me.
Yeah, they tend to like those warmer conditions that we fish out of, you know.
Big sissies.
I'll keep working on that for you.
Yeah, just tell them to get some winter clothes. Yeah.
Speaking of winter, you just got off of tracking a nice deer.
Yeah, I tell you what, the good Lord was good to me this season on our show. I just shot I think that was my fifth buck over 150 inches, and I mean, that's a career high for me, so yeah. I'm excited. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, that don't deer hunt love to fish this time of year, and, you know, you were on my radio show in St. Louis the other night. We talked about this. Winter fishing, it's really a great time to get out on that lake because hardly anybody's around.
You know, it is. You're exactly right. And if you can put up with just the elements of, you know, in the Midwest. Now, obviously, if you're north, it's going to be a little bit different than that. But geographically, if you can put up with some cooler temperatures, the fishing is just tremendous for both numbers and size. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people kind of overlook.
Yeah. And, you know, we're freezing right now, but if you think about it, it's pre-spawn in the south.
It is. I mean, that's just hard to believe. You know, you can go, depending on geographically where you're at, you know, in the Midwest, you're throwing those grubs, those suspended jerk baits, you know, staying out there, just bundle up, put some clothes on. In the south, they're gearing up. Fish are getting ready to start moving in for the spawn.
Yeah. You know, I talked to Joy Turner at Real Tree Camouflage today. Now, they're down in Georgia, and she was telling me it was freezing down there. It was 27 degrees. I said, Joy, it's 8 degrees in Iowa right now. I don't even want to.
Well, I can tell you what, right now where I'm at, it's 17 degrees on Table Rock Lake, and it is cold.
Yeah. Now, what? I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, sitting in a ground blind hunting deer is one thing because you can bundle up, but, you know, that ride across that water and it just got to kill you.
It does, but, you know, you got to be smart. It's like anything, and one of the key things to stress is wear that personal flotation device, whether it's a life jacket or one of the, you know, the ones that automatically deploy. Bottom line is keep that thing on. It's just a good idea anyway, but keep that on the entire time that you're actually out fishing while you're moving as well as fishing, because if you fall in cold water, you're done,
yeah.
And, you know, it does not inhibit fishing that much.
Absolutely. Well, folks, I tell you what, I'm excited to hear our next interview, and we're going to just go right now after this commercial break. You're going to be listening to the one and the only Pete Pond.
You've got the truck. You've got the toys. Now it's time to get the hitch that gives you more time to play with both. It's the Tow and Stow Receiver Hitch by B&W. You want options? Select the ball size, adjust the height to level the trailer, or stow it out of the way in just seconds. It's 10,000 towing pounds worth of durability, convenience, and the latest technology that has made B&W famous. The Tow and Stow Receiver Hitch by B&W. Call 1-866-BEST-HITCH. Welcome back to The Edge, the official podcast of Bass Edge.
All right, we are back on The Edge for 2008, and joining us this week is none other than who I like to call P-Squared, and that would be Pete Pons. Pete, thanks so much for being part of The Edge.
Man, it's my pleasure, Aaron, as always. It's great to be here.
Can you believe we've came full circle and we're 12 months from where we originally started this time last year?
No, it seems like just yesterday. You know, time flies, I guess, when you're having fun, you know?
It does. So what has been going on with yourself here during the holidays?
Well, believe it or not, I'm actually trying to lose some weight right now. I've been actually walking. I'm trying to run 4 miles a day, but
really?
I can't quite accomplish that, so I'm walking 4 miles a day, and I'm trying to get in shape for the upcoming elite season.
Well, you know, that, and that plays, I think that's often overlooked when it comes to the sport of fishing. You don't see necessarily fishing, or it's thought of, let's say, as a, you know, a physical sport, but, you know, being in shape helps you focus and helps you stay out on the water and really maintain that focus so that you can catch more fish.
You know, that's right. Actually, my friend Rick Klun, I spent some time with him down at Amistad, and he was talking about that. You don't need thoughts of other things like your back hurting or your legs hurting when you're standing up on the boat. Your mind needs to be focused on just fishing. And when you step up there and your back's hurting, then you concentrate, you know, more on how to position your body to keep your back from hurting rather than how to position your body to catch the fish, you know.
Right. And, you know, and plus it's just about feeling better. I mean, you know, when you feel better, it's kind of like the fish, you know. When you feel better, you're going to perform better.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
You know, and speaking of which, I mean, we had the opportunity to spend some time together on this last show down at Lake Amistad. Can you kind of set the stage, you know, I know you've spent some time down there, but can you kind of bring us up to speed on what that lake is and just some of the qualities that you can find on that lake?
You know, that's an unusual lake, and it is one of the lakes that have very large quantities of fish and also has large fish in it, which is, it's just an extraordinary lake. It's basically a river system. You know, the Rio Grande River runs right through it. But then it's got some features of a highland reservoir as well. It's deep and it's very clear. So it's kind of a mixture of two or three different systems, and it's, you know, in an unusual area of the United States. You know, most of the time when you think of a highland reservoir, you think of it being up in the North Country.
Right.
But, you know, with that being in the southern Texas, then it really brings out a little bit different characteristics than the other lakes, you know.
Well, and that's one of the things that, you know, I appreciated going down there. Not only is the scenery just phenomenal, I mean, it's just really a neat area. But you have those kind of the mountainous, you know, ranges that's, you know, the big bluff walls and just a lot of wildlife and vegetation that's really kind of unique to that area, being right there on the Texas-Mexican border. But also, from the standpoint, it has vegetation, you know, that grows in the lake. It has a lot of mesquite trees that are, you know, submerged. You know, it's deep, like you had mentioned. Plus, what about the, you know, fishing over in the Mexican waters? You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, people being scared to do that, or is there any truth to that, in your opinion?
Well, you know, you do have to respect the laws that they have, Aaron, but, you know, for the most part, it's safe, you know. But you have to do realize that you're not in the United States when you cross that border. And, you know, I don't make it a practice to get on the banks over there. And as long as you follow the rules and do what you're supposed to and you have the correct fishing license, you know, and boat registration as well, then you're good to go. And they're not going to give you any trouble. I mean, you know, unless you're just out looking for it, hey, it's not going to be a problem.
Sure. And you bring up a good point there, because that is one of the things to remember, you know, when going to fish that lake, is that you need that Mexican boating permit, and then you also
right.
need that Mexican fishing license.
Once you get down there, you can go around to some of the local tackle dealers, and they'll be very knowledgeable about everything that you need. It's basically a $100 bill. You know, when you get down there to get your license, your boat registered, and all that, it's basically cost you a $100 bill.
Sure.
And, you know, that's a small price to pay in today's economy.
Well, and then not only that, just for what you're getting to go down there and experience, you know, I mean, it really is worth it. So going from that now that you've kind of set us up and describing the lake, you know, we had a really great day on the water.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, I know we caught them on several different lures, and we talked about fishing several different patterns and lures and trying to catch different size fish, too, you know. I mean, I can remember when we started off fishing with a drop shot, it was absolutely incredible, you know, then we changed and did some other things.
Well, and that was one of the things, you know, really starting out that day, we had talked about different ways to kind of portray that lake. And you know, as anglers, you and I talking together and having a little bit of control on kind of what the show is going to be about, you know, in talking, heading down there prior to actually showing up on the lake, we had decided that we thought it would be a great challenge to see how many different patterns that we could come up with.
Yeah, you know, I do remember talking about that, and I kept thinking swim bait would be the ticket there. I mean, I thought that from the get-go. I just previously fished a tournament there, you know, a couple of weeks before that. I think it was in September, end of September or so. And, you know, I had 18 or 20 pounds on swim bait, so I was all fired up by thinking, you know, swim bait was going to be the ticket, and that not necessarily is the way it played out. Now, we did catch some on a swim bait, did catch larger fish on swim bait. But it certainly was not the lures that we used to catch the most fish.
But if you remember when we started out, we decided that, you know, we would go out and we would start with a drop shot to try and find, and yep. I remember we went out to that one island, and it was kind of an island out in the middle of a bay there, and it has a tree row with a grass line off of it. You know,
correct.
why did we pick that, you know, that one particular area to kind of start with?
Well, you know, Aaron, the fish always relate to the grass. You know, when you get in a lake that has grass vegetation in it, and I say grass, I'm talking about hydrilla. And 99 times out of 100 on a lake with hydrilla in it, the fish can be relating in some form or fashion to that grass. And that's always a really good starting point. But then when you add the mesquite trees in with the grass, then that's just an added bonus. You know, of course, we all know that fish like to hang around trees. But you put the grass and the trees, you've got two different types of structure. And actually, where those two types of structure meet, that's a great place to start looking. And then you have to figure in the water depth and realize what depth the water, you know, that the fish are using. And then you got a combination of those three things. It certainly gives you a place to start looking for the bass.
Well, in that island, you know, right there in particular, it had those trees. It had the grass line like you spoke of. But it also had kind of a shallow flat that came off. So it was a perfect staging area to where if the fish, you know, that day it had a little bit of wind, you know, we thought that we might be able to catch some shallow. But once we actually maneuvered around and started looking on our electronics, you know, that channel swing that kind of bumped up right against on the deeper side of that island, you know, we marked a tremendous amount of fish right there. We just didn't know what size they were until actually we got into and started catching them.
That's right. And I think if you'll remember, too, is as you could see them on the electronics, like you say, we started actually thinking that they were going to be a lot shallower than they were. But once we figure out the key depth, and I think that depth is probably around 25 feet, the key depth was so important. And we caught fish all over the lake at that same depth, you know. The channel swing, any time that you get on a lake that size that has that number of fish in it, if you can duplicate what you're doing in one spot and go to another spot, that's just, you know, it's almost a given that you're going to find them on every spot that's just like that.
Right.
Now, not all the time are the fish the same size on those different areas, but for the most part, you're going to have numbers of fish on the same area.
Right, and then leaving from there, you know, our theory was, because that's one of the hardest things I think to explain is why leave biting fish to go find, you know,
yeah,
other fish.
Right.
But we just didn't feel real comfortable with the size that we were catching there, you know.
You know, Aaron, I do that so many times, and I know a lot of the other fishermen do as well, but one of the things that you have to realize, if the fish are biting on this one area, that they're probably biting in a different area. And it's not always the best thing to do, stay there and just wear the fish out. You can adjust a few little things and then go from catching, you know, 2-pounders or pound and a halfers to catching 3-pounders. And just by adjusting and changing. But a lot of times that window of opportunity doesn't come all day. It just comes when the fish seem to be biting. And when they're biting, a lot of times they're biting all over the lake.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons that, you know, I know people probably watching the show and thought, oh, boy, those guys are crazy. They're just leaving the fish biting. But when those fish are biting like that, you can change things. It gives you an opportunity to change areas of the lake and check and see if another area is on and check and see if those fish are larger.
Sure.
Whereas if you stayed on just that one spot, then, you know, you would just actually run out of fish and you wouldn't have learned anything. I try so hard to make it a learning experience every time I get on the water.
And it proved to be that, because once we left that spot, we went about 3 miles, went back up into a creek channel, and it, again, talking about a channel swing, this one was a little more defined according to the topography up to the eye, but there was a creek channel that it went back, and then you had some points of some other creeks that was coming into that. And right on those points, if you remember, the thing that we learned was by going out on that 20, you know, 5, 26-foot range, we had a grass line again that dumped into and made more or less of a hump, and it had some trees on it. And right. Our biggest fish on a drop shot actually came, you remember that, suspended out of that tree, of which I thought I had that tree hooked.
Sure. You actually thought you were hung. And chances are you were hung. Your weight was probably hung, and the fish hit your bait and pulled it loose is probably what happens. That happens so many times out there. That's one of the great things about a drop shot. And the design of that is so the weight will pull loose.
Sure.
And but, you know, I do want to talk about one thing, Aaron, while we're talking about this, so the guys will know. And my dad is so good at this. Is when you're out there catching fish, it doesn't matter whether you catch them in the summertime or the spring, and you're catching them on one bait, it's going to sound crazy, but try a different bait. Find out what the fish will not bite, and that will make you learn so much. I mean, one example that I did one time, and I was catching fish almost every cast on a Bandit 200 crankbait. Well, I was throwing a parrot orange, and actually what I did was change to a chrome blueback, and that's all the change I made. And instead of catching fish every cast, I started catching one about every four casts. And that just that little subtle difference told me that they preferred one color over the other. And I noticed when I was catching them on the latter of the two, that I would hang a fish and he would be outside of the mouth, or he would actually swipe at it and not necessarily get it. I've done that with scent. I've done that with several different kinds of lures. But that's the way you learn, you know.
So it's not always that you have to change locations. It's just trying to find whether it be a color, the bait, or the area.
That's exactly right, you know. In today's world, I mean, you got to have the edge on the other fishermen. I mean, there's so many tournament fishermen that go out there and they're pre-fishing for their tournament, and they find fish on one pattern. They might find them on crankbaits, on riprap. And then once they find that pattern, they're done. They go home, they put their boat on the trailer, and they go home and say, I'm ready for the tournament. Well, what the guys that are winning the tournament are doing is they find them on the crankbait on the riprap, and then all of a sudden they go out and they find them flipping jigs on stumps. So they've got two patterns there. And then if they get really good, then they find them on a third pattern. You know, when I won the tournament on New Fall, I had three different patterns that I was catching fish on. And that's what enabled me to switch. Whenever one plan doesn't come through, you go straight to the next plan, and it, you know, it'll come through. So if you get lucky enough, now that's very rare when it happens, if you can get more than one or two patterns, then your chances of winning that tournament are very, very high.
Well, and even from the recreational angler standpoint, you know, when you're talking about upgrading your catch or catching numbers, you know, set those goals throughout that course of that day, because like I think Jay McNamara said it best when he said, you know, it's easy to go through and try different things when the fish are not responding, when it's dead in the water per se. You
right.
know, you're going to pick up jigs, you're going to pick up crankbaits, you're going to throw everything at them, change areas, do what you can to get a reaction. Well, you can also set goals for upgrading, you know, the catch or the numbers, or there's different things, I think, benchmarks that you can set for yourself that you've got to hold yourself accountable to become a better angler.
Sure. You know, and we're asking guys to do a lot, Aaron. You and I take it for granted because we get to fish all the time. We basically get to fish for a living.
Sure.
And the guys that only get off on Saturdays and can go fishing, you know, if they're catching fish every cast, they're going to say, man, we don't need to move. We need to stay here and have a great time. And I understand that. But what I'm saying is if you just experiment with it just a little bit, and you'll find that you'll learn twice as much. And then instead of just one out of five Saturdays you're going to be catching fish, you'll be catching them every Saturday.
Sure.
And it really will make a huge difference in your fishing success.
Sure, and it's not that, you know, for regardless of where you're at skill level, for some it might be, you know, starting out catching numbers or getting fish to respond on a certain bait. But then once you kind of perfect that, then set another goal for you to be able to move up. So you can start this. I mean, it's not like you have to be, you know, an angler that spends 100 days a year on the water. Regardless
exactly.
of your starting out, I mean, you can pick any starting point that you want.
Right. I just can't tell you how much, you know, how many different times that I have learned so much by changing while the fish are biting, and that's what I want to, you know, convey to your audience there, because, you know, it's so easy to just sit there and wear them out, you know.
Sure.
Just adjust just a little bit, and then all of a sudden you'll learn something else that's going to help you the next time you start catching fish.
Well, and the, you know, in our last closing minutes here, Pete, the other thing that's ironic about that is, you know, we went through the swim bait pattern, which you caught some very good sized fish on, even in those schooling fish, when we got into those with those jerkbait, you know, I think it was about one out of every five fish that was caught was a decent sized fish.
Right.
I mean, we just had to work through those. But even with all of that, because of the time frames of television, I mean, unfortunately, we didn't even get to show all the results from that day.
Oh, I know. I mean, you know, guys, having one of these shows, and I'll speak for Aaron on this, it's difficult, and you certainly can't show all the fish you catch, but I just can't tell you how much fun it is out there doing that. And, you know, we've got DVDs out. I think you've got a DVD out now, Aaron, that shows, it has extra footage on it.
Yeah, yeah, there will be. That's a good point. There's a season two DVDs will have the extra footage, and I think there's going to be about 15 to 17 minutes, which is actually gives you almost, you know, the equivalent of two shows. So, but it was just a great time, and, you know, even I learned a tremendous amount by spending that time on the water with you.
Well, you know, you learn with everybody that you're with. I mean, I learn from guys. I mean, you know, I can take my son fishing. I learn from him. I can take my dad fishing. I learn from him. And, you know, don't think because a guy's a different fishing level that you can't learn from, because you can learn from anybody. And I'm going to tell you, that's the great thing about fishing, is you can take a six-year-old out there and he'll whip your tail just like a 20-year-old will. So
that's right.
I mean, you know, and that's, you know, the fish don't know who's on the other end of the line, and that's what's pretty cool about it.
Exactly. You know, the beauty part about it is, Pete, we get to spend some time together again a little bit later in the year where we head over to Choke Canyon. So we're going to be able to have you on here and kind of dissect that lake, which is completely different from what we did on Amstead. I mean, we got down, you know, to down and dirty, I should say, on Choke Canyon, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't want to give, you know, give too much away, but thanks so much for being part of the Edge. And one of the things I would like to let our listeners know, that we have a new section on BassEdge.com, to where if you go to ProStaff@BassEdge.com, you can ask Pete or any of the anglers that we have on throughout the year questions pertaining to just different techniques or tips that we'll be using throughout the season. So, Pete, thanks so much for being part of the Edge, and we'll look forward to talking with you here in a few weeks again.
Aaron, as always, it was my pleasure, and you guys, be sure and ask us some questions, because I'm sitting here just waiting to answer them, okay?
That's right. I mean,
it's
kind of hard to explain, but you just eat this stuff up, don't you?
I love it, yeah. I mean, you know, anytime I can help anybody as far as in my sport, what I consider my sport, it's just a wonderful feeling. I mean, it's what I live for.
Well, Pete, we wish you the best of success in the upcoming season. We'll certainly be talking to you again in the future.
Thanks so much.
Give any type of boat the Edge with MegaWare Keel Guard.
It's simple to install, and we can now beach our boat anywhere.
If you own a boat, you need one of these.
MegaWare Keel Guard protects the keel of your boat from sand abrasion, from underwater obstructions, even concrete boat ramps.
Kit started under $140, and best yet, it's guaranteed to keep on protecting for life. Thanks, MegaWare Keel Guard.
Thanks, MegaWare Keel Guard.
Welcome back to The Edge, brought to you in part by Ditch Witch's Zon, establishing a new standard in trencher power and versatility.
All right, we're back on The Edge, and you know, Aaron, I really love listening to Pete. He is a Bass Elite pro, and the guy really knows what he's doing, but the best thing about it, he talks to you in a normal level.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, I've known Pete now for going on about 4 years. He's in his sophomore season with Bass Edge, and one of the things that I thought was just, you know, speaks volumes about who he is how at the end of that interview, you know, he said, send in your questions. He said, I love helping people advance in the sport. You know, and like you said, I mean, the man knows his stuff, and he has a record that proves that, obviously.
Sure. Now, for someone that's never been to Lake Amistad, how is that to fish?
Lake Amistad is a great place. You know, obviously it's gotten a lot of press through both the BASS tournament circuit and the NFLW. You know, really that is what has put that place on the map. I do have some concerns from the standpoint, just from a fish habitat, fish quality, that, you know, with all the national attention, you know, you've got a lot of people coming down there that that basically they're taking a tremendous amount of fish out of the lake. Not that that's bad, but, you know, it is on the Mexican border. We are seeing, from what the authorities are reporting, some decrease, I guess, in the amount of vegetation. The grass just isn't like it was. But I can tell you it is well worth it, and I know the state of Texas well enough to know that they are not going to let anything really long-term hamper, you know, the quality of that fishery. But it's almost like a highland reservoir. You know, Dan, in much like kind of like a Table Rock or something that you would find, you know, Lake Mead or something like that, because it's deep, clear water, but it has a lot of timber and a lot of vegetation.
Yeah, and I especially like the jerk baits for schooling fish. You know, that's just going to let you cover so much water. You got them moving, busting shad, and if you got, especially if you use a good braided line,
yes,
you're going to be able to get that fish out of there without spooking the
school. Well, again, that goes right back to what David had mentioned last year in his podcast for those targeting those schooling fish. But you know, when we started, kind of our thing was to come up with how many patterns that we could actually get going. And we started out with that drop shot. We decided to move for some bigger fish. We targeted those schools, and there was just acres. I mean, that lake has so many fish in it that there was just acres of these schooling fish that were coming up, and so we targeted those with those jerk baits, and man, it was fast and furious. You didn't even get to see, you know, even a small portion of the fish that we actually caught.
No, I believe you. And, you know, both of you, why leave fish when you got stuff biting right there?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and that's one that a lot of people ask. But at any given time, you know, when the fish are not responding, and let's say there's just kind of a real bad bite that's going on, it's very easy to try different techniques, try different spots, try different baits to get the fish to respond. But really when you learn your most is when the fish are biting, you know, a wide array of things across the lake. That's when you can actually go out and learn a lot to maybe trying to, if it's numbers that you're going after, try and figuring out how to catch more or trying to figure out the bait that's going to produce more bites. In our case, it was size. You know, we didn't have trouble getting bit, but what we wanted to try and do was to upgrade. So that's really why we employed those three strategies, being the drop shot, you know, the schooling fish, and then finally following that up with the swim bait to try and constantly upgrade our catch. And, you know, it proved out to work well.
Well, I tell you what, that was an awesome segment, and I will look forward to hearing from Pete many more times this year, and it's always neat to listen to him.
It really is.
Folks, we need to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going on the inside edge.
When I'm fishing in a tournament, time is critical. I need fast, easy access to my lures. My Cook's go-to tackle system keeps my bait organized, tangle-free, and within easy reach. It installs in minutes under any deck lid, maximizing the storage space in my boat. And its durable construction lasts even through the harshest conditions. Get organized with Cook's tackle system by calling 1-888-390-8780 or online at cooksgoto.com.
Welcome back to The Edge.
All right, we are back on the edge, and joining us to really take off and elaborate a little bit more, as like he did on the television show, is concerning the selection of reel. Jake, thanks so much for being part of the edge today.
Oh, Aaron, thanks for having me, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, I mean, I just cannot believe that we're at the beginning of a year, but you know what? That means we're that much closer to catching fish. So,
absolutely.
Hey, one of the things, you know, when you talk about purchasing reels, you walk up to the reel counter and there are literally hundreds of selections, several companies. You know, where does a person start in selecting the right reel for them?
Well, you know, there's so many people with all the options that are at the reel counter nowadays. They really limit themselves to picking up a reel, spinning the spool, checking the number of bearings, if it's pretty in color, and all that kind of good stuff, then they'll just buy a reel. And I think they really overlook what goes into a reel and what they're, you know, really looking for in a reel.
And like, what they need, in other words. You know, because one of the things that you said on part of your segment on the show was that, you know, of spinning that spool. Well, you really don't need that spool to sit there and spin under, you know, fishing applications. What you need is for that thing to perform the way that you need it to get that fish in the boat and to have the sensitivity so that you can feel that strike.
Exactly right. You know, spinning the spool just sits there and makes you dizzy. And it's really nothing to do with on-the-water performance.
So as a starting point, you know, is it based more on budget, based on technique, or based upon number of bearings, or a combination of all the above?
Well, I think it's a combination of everything. You know, really go in there before you start getting too overwhelmed with all your options. Go in there with a preconceived notion of what you're looking for in particular. What's your budget? And then break down what kind of technique are you going to be using. And what I mean by that is, if you're going to be throwing a crankbait on a crankbait rod, you want to get a 5-to-1 gear ratio reel that has a, you know, it's a crankbait and a reel. And, you know, if you're going to be flipping and pitching, you want to find a reel that's going to be comfortable in your hands all day for fatigue-free fishing. You know, all these factors go in. Don't always look at the pretty colors. Look what fits you best.
Sure. You know, and then also as beginning anglers, is there, because of budget, you know, or just getting started, maybe they don't have a technique that, let's say that they're experts in, maybe they're using this kind of as an all-purpose. Is there a particular type of reel, you know, that you want to target for, just say, a general all-purpose application?
Sure. If you're going in there just for a general all-purpose application reel, you know, and you're on a light budget, that $150 range, or maybe just a slight above that, or maybe slight below, is perfect reel. Gear ratio-wise, 6:1, 6:3, somewhere in there, not too high speed, not too slow, just a comfortable gear ratio that's going to work every technique just fine. And, you know, the bearing count, don't look at the bearings too much. You know, the bearings don't mean that much in a reel.
So in other words, the fact that we're getting into, you know, adding bearings on top of bearings anymore, that's not necessarily the best thing.
Exactly right. I mean, you look at some reels nowadays, and they have 15-plus ball bearings in them, and you just have to step back and say, where are they putting all these bearings? You know, really what you want to look for is what grade of bearings are the people putting in there? Are they high ABEC 5 or ABEC 7 ball bearings, or are they anti-rust, whatever? Look at what kind of bearings they're putting in the reel.
You know, I'm sure location of those bearings probably has something to do with that, too.
Oh, exactly. I mean, the roller bearing, where it's hitting the spool, all those go into play. Those are your main ball bearings. When you start putting them in the handle and everything else, that's really comfortable for fishing, but sometimes it goes a little overboard.
Well, you know, and speaking from personal experience in our last closing minute here, is that, you know, I've got the C400, you know, the 600 and the XS1000, and although that, you know, there is a difference in the bearings, bottom line is that quality is still there, you know, and of course,
absolutely.
I'm sure that has a lot to do with, you know, those being Arden products and the way that you stand behind them for 3 years, but bottom line is there is something in that, in any angler's budget, you know, to fit their needs.
Absolutely.
And quickly, talk just very, very briefly about reel maintenance and the importance of, you know, keeping those clean and lubed.
Reel maintenance is key. You know, nowadays, the price of reels is getting so high. I mean, you're looking at reels going up to, you know, some reels going up to $600.
Right.
And that's almost as much as a gun nowadays.
Right.
Reel maintenance is huge. Take care of your reels. Clean them. Take all the oil and grease out of them. Re-lubricate them. I would say at least twice a year. If you're an avid angler, I do it almost once a week if you're fishing every day.
Right.
That's going to give you the long-lasting performance, and it's going to make you feel like a new reel every time you put it in your hand.
Well, and exactly right. I mean, what you're doing is basically protecting that investment for the long run, as well as ensuring the other thing that I think is very important, to ensure that when you're out there that you don't have any, you know, glitches, or, you know, if you've got something that's grinding, a piece of sand or something that's up in there, you know, and you're running that crankbait, that's going to create a different feel in your hand while you're reeling that. So, you know, I totally agree with you, not only from a maintenance perspective, but also just from a functionality.
You know, it gets to the point nowadays that people want to buy a reel every year. And by doing the reel maintenance, you're going to save from buying a reel every year. You're going to maintain that reel.
Right, and it's going to allow you to put that money towards, you know, having an additional reel, or, you know, purchasing additional baits or more gas to go running around the lake.
Right.
So, Jake, where can our listeners go to get more information about selecting a reel and specifically about, you know, Ardent?
Well, you can go to www.bassedge.com. They've got all of our products on there, as well as our new website, which is www.ardenreels.com. We invite everybody to go there. We show our new commercial on there, all of our products. We also have product schematics, and it really goes in depth to what Arden's trying to do and what we're looking for in 2008.
Well, and I know certainly, too, the listeners can also go to if they have any questions specific to that, then go to Pro Staff through our email, and we'll get those questions directed to you, Jake, so that you can help them figure out which reel that they need for them.
That sounds great.
Well, Jake, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I do want to thank you for taking time out to, again, bring some more light on the subject, is what seems to be confusing, of reel selection. Have a great great day, and we wish you the best of luck in the upcoming 2008.
I appreciate it, Aaron. Thank you so much.
Aaron, I got to tell you, I kind of like that, the inside edge.
Do you? We kind of stole that off the television production side because, you know, that's the sub-segment internally within the show to where, you know, it covers, kind of gives you the inside edge on not only information, but also, you know, specific baits and techniques and just a lot of the gear that's used out in the field. So we're going to adopt that. We're going to steal it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of folks going, hey, wait a minute, where's the Outdoors Dan favorite part of the show, their product giveaways? And, you know, those have actually moved to the website, and coming in a couple weeks, there's going to be a place on the website for the people to sign up.
Yeah, by no means have we gotten rid of that. Actually, that has we're actually moving that front and center to the website, and you know, we just want to get some recognition out to the winners, and we feel that, you know, we're going to be talking about that a little bit on the podcast, but you're going to have that opportunity to sign up for that, and then also see your name and what you won posted there on the website. So
yeah, hey, but we still want your listener email questions, and we are still going to take some and answer them here on the podcast. So we want you to do us a favor, folks. Go to prostaff@bassedge.com. That's prostaff@bassedge.com, and we'll make sure that we get your listener emails to the right areas.
Absolutely. Yeah, right, look forward to hearing from them, because what we're going to do is really ship those directly out to a lot of our pro staff and our co-anglers. We're going to get them multiple answers. That way they have a more well-rounded answer to answer their question.
You betcha. Hey, next week on the Bass Edge TV, I hear that you're going on the Potomac River.
We are. We're heading up to kind of the northeast, I guess, if you will, depending on where you're at. But the Potomac River, man, it is rich in history. You know, it was almost surreal while we were up there fishing, you know, just thinking about Washington crossing the river, being that close to the Capitol. And I think a lot of people don't realize what the quality of fishing is that's up there.
Yeah, and wasn't that where they had the ironclad battles in the Civil War?
That is correct. Yep.
Yeah,
and matter of fact, you're going to see a lot of those ships, those old ships that they just basically dry docked, ran up into the riverbank and just let them, burned them, basically.
Well, there you go. Hey, and we'll have more information on BassEdge.com for you. And I know that they're going to have feature articles, and I think one's including tidal water, right?
It is, and that's, you know, that's kind of one of the things that most people don't have a lot of experience with tidal water, unless they, you know, up and unless you happen to live close to a tidal water system. But you know, that is one of the areas that I have learned a lot from, not only fishing it with individuals such as Kurt, but then reading articles. I know Steve's got a great lineup on some articles that'll be coming out on that. So it'll be great. It's going to be packed with information on how to get the tidal water, the schedules on how those tides change. Just a lot of great stuff.
Yeah. Hey, and folks, our email, our e-newsletter is going to be coming out real soon. We want you to go to BassEdge.com, get signed up for that. They will have exclusive stories and video tips improving your skills. And, Aaron, I think we need to get out of here.
We do. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, easy come, easy go. The first one of the year, now we're at the end of it. So
it's crazy. Hey, next week on The Edge, besides Aaron and I going through our normal motions, you're going to be able to hear a wonderful angler by the name of Kurt Dove. So on behalf of Aaron Martin, this is Outdoors Dan. We'll see you here next week right here on The Edge.
Bass Edge would like to thank the following sponsors who make the Edge audio program possible. Ditch Witch, Mother's Waxes and Polishes, V&W Trailer Hitches, Megaware Keel Guard, Cook's Tackle Management Systems, Ardent Rule the Water, Legend Boats, O'Reilly Auto Parts, Superstar Batteries, and the Clarks Hill Partnership of Georgia. For more information on Bass Edge, including our television show, training materials, e-newsletter, and podcast, please visit www.bassedge.com. Be sure to join us next week on The Edge.